Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, in this wandering through comic romance, we have Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. We also have Will Graham.
I don't want to pull up Shazam right now. What's that song?
This is Jolene.
I like that song.
You don't know Jolene by Dolly Parton?
Dolly Parton.
Nope. I can confidently say I've never listened to an entire Dolly Parton song ever in my life.
All right, well.
Except now.
Yeah, you got it. You want me to just let it run for the entire course of this song?
I kinda do.
This streak of yours?
I kind of do. Yeah.
All right. We'll keep it on in the background. Anyway.
I find it an interesting choice for this movie, Brian.
I mean, it plays.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I think so. I think it works.
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
She's definitely like a songstress of the South, but, you know.
But the themes are universal and timeless. Mm-hmm. We're here today to talk about Love and Friendship, the newest film from director Whit Stillman, adapted by himself from the novella Lady Susan by Jane Austen. It stars Kate Beckinsale as Lady Susan.
As the titular
In the novel, Lady Susan.
That's unnecessary.
Yes. Anyway.
I love saying that word.
Titular?
Titular?
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about all the titular loves and friendships in this movie.
How many times?
I mean, I can say titular as many times as I need to, I feel.
Have you guys ever seen the, Amy Poehler's old sketch comedy show?
Amy Poehler's
Upright
not
Citizens
old.
Brigade?
Upright Citizens Brigade has a great sketch where about the word titular. Titular.
Titular.
Titular.
Titular. Oh my
Keep
god.
Trying.
Anyway, let's move on. Yes, this is the Film Stage Show. Yes, you can find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. You can also find us on Facebook. Just search for the Film Stage Show. We've gotten a lot of new likes. Happy to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that is coming off of the inaugural episode of the Film Stage Roundtable, which posted last Thursday. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, check it out. We will have another one in a week or so. So, yeah, that's pretty awesome. You can also email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com, or you can comment on the pages that these episodes are posted on thefilmstage.com. I wanted to highlight one of those things, those comments. Marlon Wallace commented on our Lobster podcast, and Marlon said that he felt The Lobster was a homophobic film. It suggested Colin Farrell's character is bisexual, yet it dismisses and thus contemns that bisexuality, or else his same-sex attraction. I told him, in fact, if you comment on these pages, you will often get a response from one of us.
Mm-hmm.
I brought up that it might have been that the film was espousing homophobia without directly offering itself up to be homophobic, and more or less calling the culture homophobic. He responded that the film itself is being homophobic because at no point in the film that I can recall do we see a gay or lesbian couple.
Mm.
Aside from Colin Farrell's question, at no point does the film show us two men or two women that have paired up, either at the hotel or even anywhere in the city during these brief times they go there. There is no actual on-screen representation of gay people. The film opens the door to it but never goes through. It merely uses the idea as a cheap joke, and that's what made the movie disheartening for me.
That's a good point.
It is a good point. 'Cause the film does, in the hotel at the opening, show that as a laugh line, but I think it's supposed to be a laugh line at the culture. But then, as he points out, you never see a homosexual couple anywhere else in the film.
To be fair, though, this would be 90% of film, right?
I mean,
current film, like, go ahead,
absolutely.
point out a gay couple,
film is so rooted in the concept of finding someone else and being a romantic partner.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is weird that we don't see any homosexual couples.
Well, I think it kind of, because I haven't seen it yet, but I listened to, and it was a great podcast, by the way, you guys.
Well, thank you.
But I think it kind of plays into what you said, Brian, where this is basically a 12-year-old's idea of what romance is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all the same, that was a good thing to point out, the fact that
Definitely.
They brought it up and it seems like it exists in this world, but it's never shown, which I think it would have been easy for it to do at some point. I'm sure maybe you could go scene by scene and maybe find a homosexual couple in the background. But given the idea that we do explore this world through the eyes, why am I having so much trouble with that word? The eyes of many different couples, it seems bizarre that homosexuality is kind of forced out. So thank you, Marlon.
Could you say the titular character?
The titular lobster?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So thank you, Marlon. That's the kind of great... And I wanted to bring this up because Marlon and I had an exchange, and it stayed civil the whole time, and we were intelligent and respectful, and I know that there's been a lot of chatter on the internet about how fandom and film conversation can get super uncomfortable and angry and just mean right off the bat. And so I wanted to put this up as the kind of thoughtful conversation that we are trying to foster here at the Film Stage Show.
So Marlon, you are...
Is that when Brian isn't yelling at us?
Well, I don't have to be polite to you people. Find us on thefilmstage.com. Give us some comments. And again, podcast@thefilmstage.com.
Shot like a punk.
Shot like a punk.
No.
Shot like a punk. You know, I watched that movie again.
I know.
Bill. The movie that shall not be named.
999.
No!
And Bill, did you know, and I have to say that I didn't remember this from my first watch, he is actually shot through the window of a car. So he is actually behind cover when he is shot.
He's still running in the open, though. Like, that's his aim.
I never want to talk about this movie again for the rest of my life.
I would like to invite both you and Bill to my house.
No.
I will pay both of your ways, and we will go scene by scene and shot by shot through 999.
No.
So that I can show you what a worthwhile
film I want to do like
Film Stage Roundtable Volume 2.
I want to do the Christmas episode of Black Mirror where I just you're just a garbled blur when you talk about 999. I just tune you right out.
Good lord. All right. Well, in that case, let's stop talking about that particular film and let's talk about a different film. That is Love and Friendship. Again,
movie we should be talking about.
Yes, adapted and directed by Whit Stillman, who I believe we last saw with his film Damsels in Distress.
He's not in a hurry to release films.
No.
Let's just say that.
No, he's not.
He's not on the Marvel timeline.
I was not a super fan of Damsels in Distress, but let's see how he did in this film, which again stars Kate Beckinsale amongst a bevy of other fine actors.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, Bill, did you have something to say? It sounded like you were about to...
What? No.
Oh, I thought you were about to break in, so I wanted to give you that option before we get to the trailer for Love and Friendship.
Seems Lady Susan will finally visit.
Lady Susan Vernon?
That woman's a fiend.
Congratulations on being about to receive the most accomplished flirt in all England.
Excuse me for arriving this way. What a delightful family pose. Mrs. Cross has come with me as my companion to pack and unpack. And as there's a friendship involved, I'm sure the paying of wages would be offensive to us both. My brother-in-law is very rich. In one's plight, they say, is one's opportunity. Sir James Martin.
All right, that is the trailer for Love and Friendship. So let's talk about it. It's a comedy of manners. It's a period piece. It's a sort of romance. Let's see what we thought. Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off? What did you think of Love and Friendship?
Yeah, even Amanda was surprised by that choice. Okay. So this film is interesting because I think we did do a Pride and Prejudice and Zombies podcast, right?
No.
Someone who saw it may have talked about it, but certainly was not me.
I think you did a very short review of it, Bill.
Ah, okay.
For a while there, you were our shitty unwanted movies reviewer. You did that. You did Gods of Egypt.
I did. No, that was so fun, though. Okay.
Gods of Egypt was also on the 999 podcast.
Yes.
Since we're talking about 999 again,
let me talk
about Bodies and Trunks.
I'm going to murder you.
And put me in a trunk.
Yes, I will. It's cliche, but I'll do it.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Anyways, so I think I mentioned when I did kind of do a brief review of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, that I am not the biggest Jane Austen fan. I've come across her works mainly in school, as a lot of people do. But I have to say, and from what I have heard, this is not one of her bigger novels. This is not one that really kind of...
You said it was a novella, right, Brian?
Correct.
Yeah. So this didn't get a lot of the publicity and stuff like that her other works have. Certainly not on the level of Pride and Prejudice. And I got to say, whether it was this translation in particular or whether it was the tinge of comedy that kind of follows it, I absolutely adored this film. I'll confess that the first 10 minutes or so, I was kind of completely lost. It should be noted that Whit Stillman, what he does in the film that I think is both clever and awkward and weird, is that he introduces the characters in live frame. So it's the idea of like having a still frame, but you basically have your actor like stand kind of still and smile awkwardly for like 5 seconds as their like, you know, floating title is above them or below them. And it's supposed to kind of give an introduction to each of these characters, which of course is interesting because Lady Susan Vernon never, if I recall, actually gets a title card. She is just kind of, you know, runs into the scene like a hurricane that she is. And I think it's really interesting because I was caught off guard by that kind of style of introduction. It almost felt like a play at times. And I didn't know how these films, especially of the Jane Austen variety, where you're supposed to set up the stakes of who is who and who has money, who doesn't have money, who is a good match, who isn't a good match, things of that nature, it relies heavily upon being familiar with the characters, which is why he gives us their names. He gives us a short description of them. But it doesn't mean that it necessarily is going to, you know, plant a seed inside your brain and that you'll remember that in 10, 15, 20 minutes. But as the film goes along, you get into a rhythm of the characters, you get into the rhythm of the story, and you really start to settle into what it's trying to do. And I think about the 30-minute mark, it really turned the corner for me. And for the last hour, I was in love. This film really, it lets Kate Beckinsale really be quite an interesting actress that I haven't seen her have the ability to kind of take on in a while. And it's both comedic and it's also charming. One thing the film gets quite it really nails is kind of this subtle charm and this subtle sense of humor where my audience wasn't exactly laughing out loud every 5 minutes or so, but they were definitely chuckling, and there were a lot of moments that were both sincere and also funny. And it doesn't really have a mean-spirited streak inside of it. I think a lot of it can kind of be kind of on the surface. It is about basically Kate Beckinsale's character, Lady Susan Vernon, trying to find a match that will let her live her wealthy lifestyle. But in context of when the film is taking place, it makes sense because literally that is the only thing that women were kind of preoccupied with doing at the time. They very rarely could better themselves personally. Independently, they could basically marry and marry wealthy and secure their household name and keep that lineage going. And I think it paints a very kind of painful portrait of what society was like at that time. But it also does a good job of giving us a character that would basically be able to survive in any environment they put her in. So I'm talking about specifically Lady Susan Vernon, who is a kind of a wheeler and dealer throughout the film. She makes a lot of plans, and she's, you know, basically influencing people without their knowledge to do the things that she wants. Now, whether that ultimately leads her to where she wants to be is kind of debatable, I think. But we can talk about that a little bit later on in spoilers. I do want to mention a couple of the other actors, because I think I've kind of focused on Kate so far.
Oh, we're calling her Kate now, are we?
Yeah, well, you know, be friendly.
Our podcast girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's not ever heard.
Debatable.
She's also our podcast girlfriend. We all have agreed that we love Kate Beckinsale.
We've put our arm around Amber Heard in her time of need right now. it'll be okay. Morfydd Clark, who plays Federica Vernon, who is Lady Susan, aka Kate Beckinsale's daughter.
It's Kate Beckinsale.
You what? What?
No, I just thought it was funny you said AKA.
Well, I gotta.
No, I know. I'm sorry.
Okay. Anyways, I really liked her character. And she. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say this now. And, you know, we can always edit it out if it is. But she does have a scene where she has to live up to being able to sing. And she nails it. I was impressed. And then there is Sir James Martin, who just absolutely killed me throughout the entire film. The actor is Tom Bennett. And I've seen him before. I recognize his face. And, of course, I mean, I probably recognize his face without the lengthy sideburns and things like that. But and period dress. But... yeah, I've seen him before, and I never knew that he was hilarious. And he is so awkward and so he's such a child. There's a sequence where they're dancing to music. They're at this like small little ball that they throw, and he's just a giggly buffoon throughout the entire thing. He's like skipping in place. And while the music is playing and everybody else is kind of stoic and like, okay, this is fun. And he is just into it. It like 110% just into it. I think the other thing that they kind of really nail is I quite enjoyed the music. The music gives it this kind of lively, feel throughout the entire, hour and a half, and it helps give you the sense of levity that it's searching for throughout the film. And I really like that there's a lot of female characters that are both trying to you see a lot of different sides of the female kind of arcs in these films or in this film. You have the trusted friend, which is played by Chloe. I can never say her last name.
Sevigny.
We'll go with that. Alicia Johnson, who is, I guess she's American. And of course, Kate Beckinsale has some interesting things to say about Americans in the film, which are hilarious. And you also have... I'm trying to think the other woman.
Are you talking about DeCourcy?
Yeah.
Her sister?
I don't even see her name. Catherine
DeCourcy Vernon.
Yeah.
Emma Greenwell,
who kind of initially has it out for Susan and keeps having this kind of back and forth where she can never quite make up her mind. Of course, I mean, Susan is supposed
Susan
to be this
super
kind of
good at keeping people off their guard. And
yeah, she is kind of the Joker or I guess the Ace is a better.
Oh, I thought you meant the Joker. Like, from
I thought you
Batman.
Meant the Joker from Batman.
No. I meant the Joker as in like just the wild card, but I guess the Ace would be the better kind of if we're talking about cards.
She's a Joker's wild with an ace up her sleeve.
Oh, man.
The queen of our hearts.
Just don't roll any food into this.
Same with the queen of hearts.
Yeah, so I think what they do with the female characters is actually quite good. I really like the dynamic that they kind of set up and they play out. Outside of romantic comedies and things like that, you really... Having this kind of level of female friendship run throughout this film, and I wouldn't even term this as a romantic comedy. I'm sure you could probably... I would just term this as a period comedy, really. I mean, there's romance, certainly, but... The romance is.
I definitely think that the seldom seen comedy of manners genre fits this one well.
Right. Yeah.
So I wouldn't even term this as a romantic comedy. So I mean,
romance kind of happens off screen. You never really see the actual courtships.
Exactly, and it's mostly something that could literally be almost completely taken out of the film, and you would be fine. It's very inconsequential to the overall feel of the film. I really quite enjoyed this. I didn't know what to expect going in because this is actually my first Whit Stillman film. So,
All right, Amanda Waltz.
It is also my first Whit Stillman film.
Whoa!
Yeah, I will say this is a promising introduction. There's something very George. I mean, just going off of what I know about his previous films, like Damsels in Distress and The Last Days of Disco are also very female centric. I think Chloe Sevigny was in Last Days of Disco, if I'm not mistaken. So she's worked with him before. And there's something very George Cukor-esque about Whit Stillman. He obviously really enjoys working with women. I think he is very, I don't want to say in love with his actresses, but I mean, he's worked with, there are certain women that he likes to sort of showcase their talent and their charm. And
she was in Last Days of Disco.
Yeah. I was like, it was either Last Days of Disco. Greta Gerwig was in Damsels in Distress. So, but he likes to showcase women and he likes to have them be the focus of the film, which is just so amazing in this movie, because I think, like you said, Bill, this takes place during a period where women didn't have a lot of power, but in this movie, it's showing how pretty much all the women are constantly scheming, are constantly orchestrating everything behind the scenes, not just Lady Vernon, but also Catherine, because there's that scene where she goes to see her mother and she's talking about how her plan isn't going quite as she hoped. And so there's obviously all the women are scheming all the time. And the way the men are portrayed in this movie are either kind but oblivious or just complete buffoons. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Sir Martin is the definition of buffoon. I mean,
he almost like destroys this movie with his clownishness.
It's I was gonna say, because it teeters for sure. But when he first shows up to the De Courcy estate,
oh my gosh,
wearing that big purple, I guess you would call it like a carriage coat or a riding coat. They had this.
Tails.
With the tails, and it had these huge purple buttons. just even the
I
way
I like
he's
couldn't
dressed.
Focus on anything but those buttons.
Those buttons were so big.
Yeah, the buttons in this film are outrageous. It's
the
not just his.
I
was about to say, this film must get a Best Costume nomination at least
absolutely.
At the Oscars.
Absolutely.
It's incredible. And I like what they communicate with the costumes too, because with Lady Susan, like you were saying, Bill, she is a widow, and so she is trying to find a husband who can keep her within the lifestyle to which she is accustomed. But she keeps saying about how she doesn't have new money for new outfits and things like that. So she is seen in the same dress a number of times. I think there's like a purple dress that she wears a few times.
Yeah.
Well, and she's, of course, in the period or in the typical morning dress of just pitch black for a good portion of the opening film, too.
I don't remember that. Well, because the way she's introduced. Because is she wearing black when she's introduced?
Yeah, she's got a veil over her face and everything.
Oh, does she? Okay. That introduction is incredible. and I will say, this movie is stagey in a way that is almost like community theater production, over the top acting. But somehow they make it work. Because there's a woman, and it is Lady...
Are you talking about
Lady Lucy?
Mannering,
yeah.
who is just as much of a buffoon as Sir Martin. Who
this shrinking, shrieking, red-eyed,
like mousy,
crying sparrow of a woman.
Yeah,
there is a line I have never written down this many. There are so many wonderful lines in this movie. There's a part where she goes to visit, Chloe Sevigny, Mrs. Johnson, and her husband, and she delivers this line. It's just like, Mannering comes at this very hour. And I was beside myself. Because it just made me think of when I used to do theater and community theater, and you were either that person or you weren't. You were that level of comic relief. And all the typical stage productions that you would have to do where it's like, okay, I'm going to be the silly, this silly, crying, shrewish character that runs around just being an idiot. But she sells it. And it's really, like you said, like kind of like what you're intimating, Brian. It really does teeter a bit on this could be shrill and obnoxious, but then you have the wonderful exchanges between Lady Vernon and Mrs. Johnson, because basically she's scheming, and then she goes, anytime a part of her plan either fails or succeeds, she runs off to Mrs. Johnson and gives her the lowdown. And so,
yeah, I love that is kind of our way of figuring out what Susan actually trying to do. And it's such a clever thing because,
well, I think it's very typical of that era of writing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too. So, I mean, it's definitely of the source material. But I mean, there's just, like I said, the writing is insane. It's just insanely quotable, and the outfits, the performances. Like I said, I think Stillman gets the best out of his female performers. I think he wants to showcase not only how charming and glamorous and beautiful, but just how talented they are. And you know, It's strange to say I don't. Like I said before, I don't give any credence to the Bechdel test.
Oh, yeah.
This movie definitely would not. It's strange because this movie, even though it is mainly women, it mainly focuses on women. They are basically just talking about men, but in a way that is, you know, I'm trying to get him to marry me. And how do I get him to marry me? And,
I wish you, if only your husband would die.
If only, I loved when she's like, oh, I hope your husband's next episode
about
of Gout takes him. I love these women talking about how they hope their husbands die.
It's so like funny. I either need a guy who can be manipulated or who's gonna die soon.
Yep.
Yeah, and it
isn't
is
that what we all really want in our life, ladies?
Exactly. But yeah, it's incredibly clever and witty and dry. And from what I gather, and like I said before with Stillman, I haven't seen any of his previous films. This makes me want to visit his films, but I get the feeling that his previous works are very similar to this, just from what I've read about them and just from kind of seeing photos of Whit Stillman. He looks like a guy who makes dry comedies, comedies of manner. But I think this is the kind of, I almost wanted to write this off as Anglophile porn. I definitely don't think that now after seeing it. I do think that if you are, it will definitely satisfy Downton Abbey viewers who have sort of been looking for something ever since that show ended.
Oh, come on. It's been like a couple of months. Like, it's certainly they're not like craving.
Oh, I don't know about that, Bill.
Oh, no, Bill. Yeah, you'd be surprised.
What more to add to everything that has already been said? Yeah, I agree with Bill that the kind of living title cards that everyone gets ended up being completely useless.
I was like, should I be writing this down? I was like,
I don't even think I've met some of these people yet. And then one of them literally has like one scene, and it's like he's a parson or a preacher, but like
he's like a curate, I think is what they call him.
Yeah, he's introduced in a title card, and then maybe an hour later comes in a church in vestments, and I'm like, I wouldn't have a problem figuring out what he is.
Well, it's almost like Wes. It's kind of a Wes Anderson-y thing to pull to.
If you're going for that, but, like from the Royal Tenenbaums, like that actually helped.
It does.
Like give information, but this was just like I was overwhelmed and I was like, oh, I'm lost.
I think they should have, instead of throwing them all at you at the same time, they should have done it as each character was introduced, and they definitely didn't do that.
Yeah,
yeah, that
was weird.
That's a small quibble. Though it did really throw me off for a while, because I was like, oh, it's super important to know who everyone is. But then it's like, no, it's not really. These people are sort of a family. These people are sort of a family. I mean, we get an entire introduction to the Mannering clan, and then they're gone until like the last half hour.
Yep.
So
Lord Mannering doesn't even have any lines.
Where the hell are the Mannerings? They were so important in the first scene. But otherwise, yeah, this is a fun little film. I loved the costumes. I loved the sheer amount of walk and talks that were happening. Because yeah,
Sorkin should be jealous of this movie.
It's nothing but people talking. That's it. It's all there is. And the fact that the movie finds ways to make that vaguely compelling through framing and camera work is great. Not to mention ostentatious costuming. And just really good performances. Morfydd Clark as Frederica is great. She's got she reminded me of Catherine from Veep, if anyone watches that show. Just this poor henpecked girl who's like at her wit's end and looks like she's about to cry.
She's like Napoleon Dynamite. She just keeps running out of scenes. She's like, excuse me. She'll just run off.
Jen Murray as Lady Lucy Mannering. She's great.
There is a point where Frederica is talking to the preacher. She comes out and DeCourcy. Reginald.
Mr. DeCourcy.
And she sees him. She mentions something about how wet he is, like how he's been drenched by rain. And then immediately she touches his shoulder and then takes off in a dead sprint. And you're like, what? Why do you keep doing this? Like, why is this happening?
That's fantastic.
And then, of course, you know, we got to give it up for our girl Katie B.
Because
she really brings it in this movie.
She to me is an actress in the same vein of actors and actresses as like Jim Sturgis. I'm like, you know, I really like them. I don't know why. I don't feel like they've been asked to do anything that hard. But whenever I see them in a movie, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm down for this.
Have you ever seen any interviews with Kate Beckinsale?
No.
She is so funny and intelligent and so self-deprecating.
Obviously, I will have to start watching more interviews with her.
Oh, she's a good interview. She's so great.
Well,
yeah, I watched. I listened
to EPK packages, and
I listened to one for this film in particular, and it was pretty interesting. So, yeah.
Well, she is fantastic, and that's great because she's in pretty much every scene, and yeah, it's great to see a director like give her a showcase for all of this greatness that she has, because she can deliver these hilarious stinging lines so perfectly.
Oh, that scene where she comes down the stairs and first sees Reginald and Catherine.
And she's like, what an interesting pose.
She says, oh, what such charming faces. And they just, their mouths are just agape. They just look like two dead fish.
And she keeps doing that too. Like, she keeps walking in on people and they just pause. Whatever they're doing, they're just like, what? And of course, she keeps making comments on it.
Well, that's the thing, because she is portrayed as this plotting, scheming woman, but you just can't help but love her. I mean, she's you kind of want her to get away with everything that she's doing, and she does, and it's wonderful.
Oh, I'm just thinking, like, yeah, we've said it all. I mean,
yeah.
I said, Sir James Martin, Tom Bennett. He nearly wrecks this film every time that he is on the screen because he is such a buffoon, like to a degree that is astounding. His whole introduction just goes on because he can't end his conversation. And it's like, why don't you two go and talk about, you know, modern agricultural
advances.
And he's like, oh yes, you know, I'm so into modern agricultural advances. And then he starts wandering away and then he turns back and he's like, you know, I find myself constantly saying to Collings, my groundskeeper, Collings, what of the advances in agriculture? And it's just like, what the fuck? Get out of here, you maniac.
It's so funny too, because in the beginning, Lady Verdant is trying to pawn her daughter off on him and she refuses his hand. And so he follows her to the DeCourcy estate and
lame conversation.
What's that?
I'm just thinking of like people listening to this. It's like, oh, she rebuffs his advances and he follows her to the DeCourcy estate. And I'm like, if people didn't know how funny this movie was, we would sound like maniacs right now.
It really does. Oh, man. Now you know what it's like trying to talk about Downton Abbey with someone who's never seen the show.
Oh, no.
It's impossible. It's impossible to explain why that show is appealing when it's basically just like, ooh, someone stole the Lord's pen and they had to find it and they came up with a scheme. It's just like so ridiculous, but it's kind of
in it.
But they find a way to make it compelling. I can't even. It's such a feat.
It's such a feat.
It really is.
But his buffoonishness is just insanity. Like every scene he's in, I'm like, he's tearing this movie apart. But it's through the committed performances of everyone else who has to view this and know it's insane, but keep their own heads. That it just goes on, and it works, super well.
It almost made me think of, we put on, when I was in college, for some bizarre reason, the theater, the head of the theater department decided it would be a good idea to do Molière. Have you ever seen a Molière play?
I've read one.
It's basically like this, but way more wigs.
How can there be more wigs?
There's way more.
Many wigs in this movie.
Oh, there's way more wigs.
That's another thing. I was fascinated with wig choices in this movie. All of the women have a basketball's worth of hair piled on the back of their head, with tresses and curls and locks falling out here and there in the most artful of way, all held with fashionable headbands that perfectly match their dresses, trimmed in lace of the finest tulle. I mean, it's
all the way from the Orient.
It's fucking insanity. And it's
not
perfect.
Just the women. because there's a scene where Lady Susan goes to London, and she has already started this courtship with Reginald de Courcy, and he follows her there, and they're having this, you know, they're talking, and there's a medium shot of him where I was just looking at his hair, and the curls, just the layers of curls, were so perfectly placed and so beautifully coiffed. I was like, I want to reach into the screen and just put my fingers into his hair. Like, I got such an overwhelming urge, like almost like erotic urge to put my
just
hands,
getting your hands
in his
all
hair.
Over Reginald.
They were so beautiful.
He had these like waves or like these little almost anime-ish like spikes that were curled back. It was
beautiful. So, I want to mention two things real quick.
Bill, this better have something to do with beautiful hair.
Sure. So one thing I want to mention really quick is the fact that we never actually see it. So period pieces like this, one thing they often do is they show the women getting dressed because it's such a big, like, bombastic
production,
kind of. Yeah, it's such a production of.
Yeah, that's
of
how Anna Karenina opens, basically, is showing Anna getting dressed.
And I was so fascinated that they never actually do that in this entire film. And
that's kind of what I like about this movie. This goes at a pretty good clip. This is a 92-minute movie, which I appreciate in a time when 2.5 hour long movies are fairly common now.
sure.
I'm very cool with this.
The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, I mentioned at the top about Pride and Prejudice and zombies, and it is funny because there's a character played by Matt Smith named Parson Collins who reminds me a lot of the character Mr. Martin in this film, because he is so bombastic and so over the top and so just flamboyant. Whether you want to call him gay, whether you want to call him just flamboyant, I don't care. He is just flamboyant, and both of their characters are like that. And they both serve as this really weird, they stick out like a sore thumb, right? And you, every time they're on screen, you just know that they can't keep their mouth shut. That if you see them, they're going to say something ridiculous. Like, that's either going to make you cringe or just make you just want to laugh and just bawl. And so, yeah, they both serve a very similar purpose. And I'm not sure if Parson Collins in the book Pride and Prejudice is really nearly the buffoon he is in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And I'm really curious to see kind of the comedy side of Jane Austen and whether that was inserted or whether that's actually in the novella itself.
I have no idea.
I would be interested to see how this film differs from the novella.
Yeah, because the novella you can finish off in probably 1 or 2 days.
Yeah.
Easily.
Usually what they're good for. Do we want to get into spoilers?
I thought we were already.
Oh, yeah.
Are we?
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Not yet.
I mean, there's not a lot to spoil, but I did, you know, talking about the novella, I'm curious as to whether certain things that happen at the end would be the same or not.
Because it seems a bit scandalous.
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah. So
let's
let
go
us
ahead and
draw the curtains and withdraw from polite society to talk about spoilers for Love and Friendship. For instance, we have the fact that at the end of the movie, since Frederica is so opposed to marrying Sir James Martin, Lady Susan Vernon decides to wed Sir James Martin because
he is a buffoon. That kind of made me sad.
Oh, she's getting it.
It's he is so devoid of any concept of his own position that he seemed like genuinely happy. Despite the fact that she'd made a cuckold of him, and I'm not being an MRA right now. I'm speaking purely in the literal meaning of cuckold. He is giving shelter to the man who left his wife for her, and they are banging behind his back. He believes that she got pregnant the day after their wedding, and he's fine with it. He's like, I'm going to be a dad, and I've got my best friend. We go hunting all the time, and my wife's super cute, and everything's coming up, Sir James Martin. And he's like, okay, you know? Like, he's super fucking cheerful and just so happy with the way his life is going that, like, I can't really find fault in that.
I was just, like, looking at them at the end, and it's her standing between them because they attend the wedding of her daughter to Reginald de Courcy.
What a and fine couple they make. Oh, I think those kids are going to go far.
Goddamn adorable. Everybody in this movie, that curate, like when she goes to the church to visit that curate.
I really thought that that was going to turn a corner and she was going to follow after him. Yeah. Like, I was really into that. I was like, oh man, come on.
He is a doll baby. Everybody in this movie is gorgeous or adorable or both. It's incredible. But yeah, so they're at, I mean, she's standing between those two men at the wedding and I'm like, you know what, girl? I gotta respect. I gotta bow down. Good for you.
She put her chips on the table, and Sir Martin was just like, "Yeah, I like those. I like those. Yeah. I keep them."
I mean, you would take Kate Beckinsale.
Oh yes.
Anyway, anyway, she comes pregnant with another man's baby. Sure, take it. I would take her. I'd be like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're saying this.
Kate Beckinsale. Yes.
Each of
so
us
Kate
as,
Beckinsale, if you're listening.
As straight as can be.
No, she's no, but it's just, like you said, Brian, it is that scene. Well, then again, you have to think Madame Bovary and I mean, those were around.
I mean, Anna Karenina did it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that happens, but those are usually
tragic.
Yeah, like a tragedy. Yeah. So it seems a little, I was a little shocked that was the ending. I'm like, I wonder if Austin did that or if Whit Stillman extrapolated.
Would that be considered ribald?
Possibly.
I don't think that's ribald. I don't know. Yeah, it was, I kind of thought the same thing. Just, yeah, like you said, just being a bit startled, not startled. That's not the word I want to use for this movie ever.
You literally gasped out loud in the theater.
I gasped. I peed a little.
Fuck. Jesus.
No, but it was a little, I mean, for that time, I guess just for that time period, and especially for Jane Austen. Jane Austen is, I don't ever remember. I mean, I definitely had a lot of like Anglophile, very literary friends who read Jane Austen, and that, I mean, from what they have told me, that would never be something that she would do. But I don't know. Was this a later career novella for her, though?
Yeah,
was
you know,
this
like a later when career Jane work? Austen had already made her fortune and was just like in her I don't give a fuck period.
Yeah.
You know, she was just going to burn it all down, man. She was going to burn the whole freaking system down.
She's like, I'm richer than God. I don't know. Well, was she?
I'm trying to remember, and I'll look this up after I mention it, of course. I was listening to the interview with Kate Beckinsale, and she was saying something along the lines of the fact that this was never actually credited to her.
Oh, really?
And of course, if I'm not mistaken as well, Jane Austen wrote underneath a pen name for much of her career. She never actually, or she didn't make a bulk of her career writings under the name of Jane Austen. She wrote it under a pen name. And I think this is one of those works that she didn't want or didn't really write for and get credit for until much later. So I mean it's a novella, and again it kind of goes back to what I was saying that I had never heard of this. I think Kate Beckinsale had never even heard of this, and it's one of those things where it's just been kind of lost, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that this is a Jane Austen, you know, work that a lot of people haven't heard of is just kind of, oh, really? You know?
Yeah, I think that probably gave them room to sort of play with it and I would imagine they took creative liberties with it, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, I'm looking at the Wikipedia, which is probably...
I was just looking at that, too, yeah.
It's
hard to tell.
It seems like... No, it seems like her infidelity was definitely a big part of the book, or a part of the novella. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know about the baby and everything.
Yeah.
So,
One thing I want to mention...
What was that?
I said one thing I want to mention is this is... So... Do we want to talk a little bit about Amazon Studios?
Do we?
Look, if they're going to be a player, I saw this in a theater. Where did y'all see it in?
I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
Amazon Studios with this, much like with,
I'm trying to think what
other the name of Spike Lee's film.
Oh, Chi-Raq?
Chi-Raq. Yeah. Okay. They do the thing where they create it, they put it out in theaters, but then they maintain exclusive streaming rights, kind of trying to cut the difference between like a Netflix original movie. Like, they're doing better than Netflix did by Beast of No Nation. They're trying to be an actual theatrical release, whereas Beast of No Nation, they, you know, released at the same time on Netflix and in theaters, and as such, no one saw it in theaters.
Right, exactly.
So you have to wait a little bit, but you will know that it's coming, and, you know, that we'll see what happens. I think that Amazon is going about theatrical playing a lot smarter than Netflix did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I feel it's kind of tough because Netflix, with Beast of No Nation, that was a film that, yes, it starred Idris Elba, but, I mean, whether he's a big star or not is debatable. And just
I would say he's bigger than Kate Beckinsale.
I don't know. Idris Elba hasn't had a show that was anchored by him, or a film trilogy that was anchored by him.
Luther?
No, I'm talking about Underworld.
Luther. Idris Elba had a show called Luther that was
but that was not nearly as big
The Wire?
As Underworld.
I like how I go Luther and you're like The Wire. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Underworld was a thing like 15 years ago, but like Idris Elba is a known man. Like,
well, yeah, he was in Pacific Rim. I mean,
that movie should have had, and this is something I'm actually going to want to talk about in the roundtable at some point. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The concept of a movie gaining its value purely from its social merits rather than its aesthetic merits. I mean, Beast of No Nation tackles child soldiers and civil war in Africa. I mean, like, that's a big... important issue that's very much in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And this movie is an adaptation of a James Austin novel that most people don't even know about. So the concept that Beasts of No Nation, which you could even sell just purely through a fast cut trailer with all the action scenes, should be less marketable than this is insanity. That's not degrading this movie.
Yeah, I think that's debatable. I think we have a topic. I think we have a topic.
Yeah. Anyway. We'll save that for the roundtable.
Indeed. Yeah. Save it for the roundtable. Yes. Speaking of which, we're coming to the end of this review. So let me tell everyone to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Again, just search our name on both of those. And if you have a conversation that you'd like us to have during one of our roundtables, don't hesitate to throw us our way. We definitely will look into those, and if it has merit, we will talk about it. That's all for today, though. I don't know what we're going to be talking about next week, as has been an issue a lot recently, because most of what's coming out seems like shit. Just going to be honest with you guys.
Wow,
I don't
that was
see
frank.
Us sitting down and talking Warcraft, or Now You See Me Too.
This is bananas. So I was just looking at Amazon Studios' upcoming kind of filmography. Mm-hmm. So they have Cafe Society. How relevant? They
I know
also
that they
have
the new.
Let me go through it.
The whole
they
thing,
have,
Bill.
No, they also have Neon Demon.
Yeah, they got Neon Demon.
Oh, did they get Neon Demon?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
So,
Manchester by the Sea is the one I'm thinking of. They bought that at a festival, I believe.
What is that?
So they didn't produce it, but they're definitely releasing it, which, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, they're doing distribution, which is Yeah, I mean, that's smart because you think
that's
you
what
go.
Netflix
I mean,
did again for.
Well, this is something even we were talking because one of the things that Marlon, our devoted listener, pointed out that during the roundtable was we forgot to talk about "Hello, my name is Doris" for the first person pronouns. Hello, my name is Doris.
I was going to save that for the roundtable episode to talk about.
Hello, my name is Doris.
No, that what Marlon said.
Oh,
just because that's not this.
It's relevant to what I'm about to say.
Okay, we'll go for it then.
Yeah, but with "Hello, my name is Doris." That movie was made for, I think, like $1 million. It was bought for like $1.7 million, and it's made $14 million. I mean, you have to think you can buy these little indies very easily and make. I mean, they're not going to make $1 billion, but worldwide. But they're going to make. You know, you're going to still get a little bit of a return on it. So, I mean, it's a smart way to start out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, and I think. So what Amazon is doing is we're saying it's distributed by them, but I think I think they just basically have latched onto roadside attractions. So they're a part of they're a loose part of Lionsgate. They were bought a portion of roadside was bought by Lionsgate, and so. This one was obviously distributed by Roadside, and then Manchester by the Sea appears to be distributed by Roadside. And so I think what they're doing, they're smart enough to realize, hey, let's not jump in. They're almost doing the Pixar or the Marvel Studios kind of version where they're like, hey, we're clever about how we can spend money. But we don't know jack about how to distribute it, right? And so let's kind of latch on to someone that has been in that game for a while. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll transition to becoming our own once we learn enough, you know? So I think it'll be interesting because Amazon's obviously a very smart – I mean, Bezos is – a very smart kind of entrepreneur and executive. And so I think he's going to be able to see things that are kind of silly about the distribution model and kind of dumb. And I mean, look, I mean, the fact that Netflix and Amazon are basically distributing films and then basically saying, hey, we're retaining exclusive rights for when this film basically comes to market. For all streaming platforms from this point on, I think they're obviously bucking a trend of you know having to fight over it. They're just cutting out the middleman, right? And so I think they may end up be playing an interesting game where they have a lot of money to spend. I think Netflix actually. Self-financed a sci-fi movie by Chan-Wook Park that's coming up.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously these are two players that, I mean, if we're talking movies, we have to be aware of.
So, let's tell the fine people where you can be found at home. Bill Graham.
You can find me writing on the film stage, and you can find me on Twitter at CableBFG.
All right, Amanda Waltz.
You can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz, also Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and you can also find my blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, likewise with just about every other social media platform. You can find my reviews on thefilmstage.com. Once again, remember to comment on these pages where we post these on thefilmstage.com. We will respond. We will talk about what you want to talk about. That is all for today. Join us next week. We'll be talking about something that is not Now You See Me 2 or World of Warcraft.
Oof.